Good morning, and welcome to the July 6, 2020 meeting of the Plain County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for calling in and joining us this morning. In the spirit of social distancing due to the COVID-19 virus, today's meeting will be conducted by telephone. Members of the public that may be on the phone are encouraged to make comment and ask questions. If you wish to do so, please state your name and address for the record, and please also limit your comments to 3 minutes. I will open up our phone lines for such comments later in this morning's session. This morning's meeting is a study session. The business session will start at 1 p.m. this afternoon. Today we have all five commissioners on the phone, General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Garfin, Clerk of the Board, are in the boardroom. At this time, if you'd please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America,
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So, commissioners, at this moment in time, we have an approval of the agenda. Any item on the consent agenda shall be subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear any such comments?
Commissioner Arsenault.
Yes, Commissioner Smith.
I would be like to suggest, based on staff recommendation, that we move 3 items from the regular agenda to the consent agenda, and those would be items 10, 11, and 12.
All right. Was there also an item 13 recommended?
Commissioner Arsenault, I think that I suggested to you in an email yesterday, item 13, but I made a mistake in doing that. So I apologize for that. I think it should just be 10, 11, and 12.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, Commissioner Smith, your motion has been received. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved. Thank you, Dennis. And it's been moved and seconded now. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The ayes have it. So, Steve, I think we're ready to move on into the agenda.
Great. Okay, we would like to move to item 3, stakeholder survey results. Recall that every 2 years we employ Burke Business Intelligence Group to do a survey of key stakeholders. Some of these are customer owners, but they're engaged in some way that is more than just a traditional customer owner relationship, and many of them are not. Federal agencies, state agencies, trade associations, etc. And so we come back to the board to describe to you those survey results. And I would just mention, you may be wondering about the customer survey that is underway now. Probably would see the results from that in about a month or so. So with that, I hope that Joel Rasmussen is on the line to provide us this report. Joel, turning it over to you.
Present. Present. Thank you for having me here. First of all, how is the sound quality?
Excellent.
Loud and clear. Very good. All right. Thank you for having me. It is, again, my pleasure to present these results. We have been, as Steve mentioned, working with Chelan County PUD. This is the fourth time that we've conducted this type of an assessment of your stakeholder relationships. I'm going to move through the presentation fairly quickly with the intent to stop on some of the key items, but then also to give time for Q&A. With that said, our preference is always to treat these less as a performance and more as a working group session. So if there are specific questions that arise, please don't feel shy to stop and ask specific questions. Just to give you for anyone who's not familiar with the work that we do, I want to give you a very brief background on really the methodology, which I think is what distinguishes this work. The assessments that we conduct for both stakeholders and for clients, for some of our other customers, are all designed from the perspective of the other side. It's not that we don't care about what Chelan County PUD cares about, it's that we can best serve Chelan by reporting back on the issues that are most important to your stakeholders. And so the assessment is always designed from that perspective. At the beginning of every process, we conduct deep focus interviews with folks inside the PUD, and when we designed the original assessment with stakeholders, it's to really hone in on what are the most important issues that govern the satisfaction or lack thereof within these relationships. And then there's a continuous self-check built into the assessment itself, because as we go through these every year, we're asking of each of these issues, how important is this issue on a scale from 1 to 10? And if there are issues that over time rise in importance, where they start to show up in some of the comments, those may make their way into the assessment. If there are issues that are dropping in terms of their overall importance score, those may be weeded out. And so it really provides an always current look at what is most important in the minds of your stakeholders and what's most, important within all these relationships. So let's jump into this. I'm going to go ahead and just call out the page numbers for the presentation. And as I said, I'm going to skip over some of these in the interest of time. But as we start on page 4, through that deep focus interview process and through doing this work over the last 4 years, we've really focused on essentially 19 questions that really get to the heart of each of these stakeholder relationships. And for each of these interviews, they're conducted one-on-one with one of the principals of our firm. And we ask each of the stakeholders, how important is each one of these issues on a scale from 1 to 10? And then we ask how they see the PUD performing, again, on a scale from 1 to 10. And what that will show us then is, again, are we asking the right questions? Are these questions coming back with an importance score of 8 or higher? And then how is the PUD performing? Is there a gap? If, for example, there's an issue that is an average of a 9 for importance score and the average performance was 6 across all the respondents, then there's a pretty decent gap there that they see for potential improvement. So that's the structure of the body of the quantitative portion of the assessment. It's a gap survey. We also then ask summary questions, and we have a portion where we have an open-ended conversation. And that really, I think, for most of our clients is where a lot of the juice of these assessments kind of comes to light. Because if we've done our job correctly, when we're having a peer-to-peer conversation with these folks, when we're asking about their issues, then we can build rapport to the point that they really feel like we're almost an advocate on behalf of their concerns, and they'll share very candid feedback with us that they might not necessarily share with the PUD. So that's the design of the assessment. I will speak briefly about who we spoke to. So that's on page 5. We ended up speaking with 59 individuals, 52 stakeholders, and then we also do 7 executive assessments. Those are just a shorter set of questions that are more focused at the high-level relationship. And that was a total of 56 organizations. We give people at the end of the interview, after they know how they've responded, the opportunity to either be on record or to be anonymous if they choose to. There are a number of reasons that people would want to be anonymous, but we had 97% of our respondents on record. So almost across the board, we know exactly how each one of these folks responded on every question, which really allows the PUD then to go in and have a very detailed action plan based on the feedback from every one of these stakeholders. And we also conduct the same interview asking about these same issues of internal employees. And what that ends up giving us then is a very interesting apples-to-apples view of whether or not there's alignment within the organization versus how stakeholders see the world. Because, again, we're asking about exactly the same issues that stakeholders are concerned about. On page 6, for our clients that have been doing this for years and years, this is usually the page of the presentation that they'll jump to because this is an overview of the results. So I'll start by talking about the average importance score. And as I said, what we're looking for is an average importance score of 8 or above. That's generally a strong indication that we're asking the right questions. I want to talk about what we're seeing here. The average importance score across all of the respondents. Sorry, there's a little music in the background. Is that?
Yeah. Is there someone not on mute?
I just wanted to make sure you could still hear me.
Yeah, there's someone that's gone on hold.
Yeah, they put us on hold.
It's nice music.
Just hang on a second, Joel. We're going to see if we can do something about
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah. I'll pause.
Rebecca's going to test her ability to use some new technology here.
Master mute button.
If anybody can do it, Thank you.
Sorry, Joel, this is the first time we've run into this, so
you've been muted. To unmute yourself, press star 6. You're no longer muted.
Worst case, I guess we could all hang up and call back in.
It's a possibility we'll go to that, Joel, but we think we might be close, so give us a couple more minutes here. Identify alternative line that we could call in on. Teresa?
Hey, Steve, you had it. We were on mute a moment ago.
Yeah, unfortunately, it muted everybody, though. Call them and say, is anybody out? Did someone just rejoin the line?
Yes, this is Lorna. I just rejoined.
Lorna, when you go on hold, it unfortunately puts hold music on. So for anybody that's on the line, please don't go on hold.
Thank you for letting me know that.
Okay, Joel, back to you.
All right, let's jump right back into this. So we're on page 6, overview of results. As we were discussing, the importance score helps us determine whether we're asking the right questions. We're looking for an average importance score of 8 or above. And I want to talk about this because we'll get into this a little bit later as well. One of the things that we noticed in this assessment was that importance scores are rising. So this average importance score that we're seeing here, 9.3, was the average across all respondents across all the different factors that we asked about, 9.3 out of 10. That's higher than the assessment that we did previously, which came in at 9.1, and the assessment before that was 8.8. So we're seeing that incrementally over time, these issues are becoming more, not less, important to stakeholders. So that was it's interesting because that plays into a couple of areas where we actually saw a slight increase in the gap, meaning there's a perceived larger room for improvement, even though the underlying performance scores also rose. It's that the PUD is performing better in the eyes of stakeholders, and yet they're asking even more of the PUD, would be one way to read that. So the average importance score for this year was 9.3. The range was 8.8 to 9.7. So of all the factors that we asked about, the lowest average was 8.8. And I want to make sure and clarify that there are individual responses that may be lower or higher than that. That 8.8 refers to all the responses for one particular factor. And that'll become clear when we get to another page. The score below that is usually the big reveal. It's the number that everyone is looking for every year. How have we performed in the eyes of our clients, or in this case, in the eyes of our stakeholders? And so the average performance score this year was 8.9. That compares to 8.7 in 2018 and 8.6 in 2016. So again, just a very nice incremental increase in performance. The range of performance scores was 8.4 to 9.6. So of all of the issues that we asked about, the lowest average score was 8.4, if you were to put that in grade terms, very solid B territory, all the way up to 9.6. And so we come back with a lot of quantitative data that you can look at. We also bring back just our general sense after having conducted all of these different interviews. There are themes that emerge. There are just things that we keep hearing about over and over, and those are the things that we kind of bring back in these reports and want to bring to your attention. With 97% of the participants being on record, the PUD also, as I said, has the ability to go through and read every response, and I know that Steve and the staff are very good about doing that because it does give you a very clear action plan about what is important to each of these stakeholders. But we also like to include some of that in the presentation. And so the things that we heard about most really were that stakeholders noted much higher engagement this time around from the PUD. There was greater engagement in the community, greater involvement, and really pretty much across the board, as we'll see, there was improved performance from the PUD. 17 of the 19 factors that we asked about showed a performance increase from the last time around, from a low of 1% to a high of an 8% increase. There are low gaps pretty much across the board, and you would probably surmise that anyway, with an average importance score of 9.3 and an average performance of 8.9 across the board, it just means that the PUD is matching up very well to stakeholder expectations. And then we also ask, how satisfied are you? That summary question. This year, 73% of stakeholders identified as being extremely satisfied with the PUD, and that was up from an already, just in terms of the other work that we do, a very high 68% being extremely satisfied the last time around in 2018. On page 17, we get into the first of our very data-dense slides, and I'm just going to go over this very briefly so that you can get an understanding of what the story that this slide tells, and then on your own time you can get into it, because I do want to make sure that we have time for discussion here. What we're looking at on page 7 is the first five factors that we ask about, and I'll talk about number one as our sample, and then you can apply that to the rest of them. The first question asks, how important is it that Chelan County PUD provides prompt and accurate responses to your questions and requests? So what we're looking at here is a column of 3 years of responses. The medium blue line on the far left is the current assessment, that's 2020. The light blue line in the middle is 2018. The dark blue on the far right is the 2016 performance for that question. And then that same column pattern repeats for the rest of them. On question number one, you'll see that the performance score, that's the darker bar in front, is 8.8. And it's matching up so closely that you can't even see the dotted line behind it, which is the importance score of 8.9. So there's almost, and you'll notice down below, it actually says the gap is 0.0. For the purposes of the presentation, we round to a 1/10 decimal. If you dive down, you can see a little discrepancy there. But on the chart, it looks like they're perfectly matched up, and we would argue this is really perfectly matched up. So there's really almost no gap there in terms of providing prompt and accurate responses. The cumulative response from stakeholders is that the PUD is matching up exactly to their expectations. If we take a look at the next one, you can see an example of a small gap. How important is it that the PUD resolves issues in a time frame that meets your needs? The important score on that one was a 9.2. Performance was 8.6. So there's a small gap there of 0.6. We also look at standard deviations just to get a sense of, you know, how much consolidation is there around these responses. If there's a standard deviation of 1.5 or below, we can generally say that there's a lot of agreement around these responses. Above a standard deviation of 2, then the responses start to be disparate enough that you would want to dive into each individual response, because there's just less that you could draw out of a consensus or an average overview like this. The standard deviation for this first one is 1.6, and then we also look at the performance change from the previous year, which was a 2% increase in performance. So then with that understanding of how these graphs work, the quick read here is that pretty much across the board, we're seeing performance increases in almost every area. For question number three, there was an 8% performance increase from the last time around. The PUD effectively works as a partner with you to find solutions to issues of mutual concern. So that played in, again, with a lot of the commentary we heard in the narratives about the PUD really showing a lot more engagement and involvement in the community, even from previous high levels. Overall, for staff interaction, I'm going to go ahead and jump to page 9. We saw performance gaps. We saw performance improvements, and we saw gaps decrease, which is another way of saying the same thing. Staff interaction matches up very well to stakeholder expectations, and there really were no specific insights that were systemic. So really, we can say across the board, staff interaction received very high marks this time around. In the interest of time, I'm going to jump ahead to slide number 11, where we look at communications. This is another very strong area. Here we had performance either a slight increase or trending in a very high range, 9.0, 8.9, 8.5. We have very small gaps. Slight decrease in performance, 2% down for question number 6. The PD communicates with you in a forthright manner. The other two show increases. But again, in terms of communication, the PUD is matching up very well to stakeholder expectations. I'll go ahead and jump to page 12 for just a moment. We do look at gaps where we're just looking at how the gaps have progressed over time. And so here we see the gap for question number 6. Even though there was a slight drop in performance, the gap stays the same from the previous year. The gap is compressed quite a bit for question number 7 from 0.6 down to 0.3. So again, a smaller gap means matching up better to stakeholder expectations. And then we saw the same thing for question number 8. The PUD clearly communicates policies and positions from 0.7 to 0.5. I'm going to go ahead now and jump to, let's see, what slide is this? Slide number 15, public responsibilities. This is the largest section of the assessment. We had to break this into 2 slides because there's so many questions here. So for this first section, we're looking at questions 9 through 14. And just as a sample, the PUD meets its public service obligations, meets renewable energy and conservation responsibilities. These are really the core issues that the PUD serves in the public's in the public sphere, serving the community. And here again, we see for almost every one of these, there's a slight increase in performance, or, well, no, I guess on this page, every single one, there's an increase in performance. This was not the one where there's an increase in expectation as well. I think that's the next slide. So for here, we're seeing performance increases pretty much across the board. I will jump ahead to slide number 17. And so this is the one where, you know, we heard a little bit about this in the narratives. Here you can see on question number 15, the PUD provides reliable and affordable water and wastewater services. The performance from the last assessment in 2018 to this one went from 8.3 to 8.7. Actually, no, that's reversed. In 2018, it was outperformed. That was a performance, what was that? Performance score of 8.6 and an importance of 8.3. The performance score inched up just a bit to 8.7, but the importance actually jumped quite a bit. So even though there was an increase in performance, there's an even bigger increase in expectation, which is why this gap increased from the previous year. Question number 16, PUD is a good steward of parks and recreational facilities. This outperforms every year, and that's no different this year, performing above and beyond stakeholder expectations there. And for the rest of these, we show very small gaps. On page 18, we can just take a quick look at, here we highlight just the gaps, and we can see what I was talking about with question number 15. There was a small outperform in 2018, but because the expectations rose so much, now we see a small gap of 0.5 in 2020, even though the performance increased from last assessment to this one. Our overall finding for public responsibilities, this is really an area of strength. It had the highest average performance score of the whole assessment and also the lowest average gap. And we saw performance scores increase across nearly every factor. There were a couple of factors where the expectations were also increasing. In terms of stakeholder insights, the things that showed up most frequently in the open-ended narrative portion was, again, this transition to a post-carbon future. It's been an area of focus in the past. That hasn't changed. It's still on stakeholders' minds. The other thing that happened this year, and this seems obvious at this point, but it wasn't on the public's mind at all when we started, there was a very clear point in the middle of doing this assessment in late February, early March, where COVID just took over. And despite that, we were still able to conduct these interviews, and we had 97% of the folks on record. We had long, in many cases, very almost extra human and candid conversations, I think, because people were, you know, sheltering in place and just had the time to have a conversation. But you can see in the narratives where there was a very distinct shift, and suddenly what was most important, the question that we ask at the end is, what do you see as the most important issue that the PUD should focus on for the next 12 months? That shifted very quickly to, let's keep the lights on, let's keep everyone safe. COVID is now suddenly on everyone's minds, and so that rose to the top of what folks were concerned about. But we just, you know, we're always very careful that our role is to bring back the truth about these relationships. We don't provide commentary. We don't provide opinion. We're happy to give you our opinion if you ask for it, but we're very careful about not putting on the opinion hat, or if we do, you know, being very clear to announce that. I'm wearing my opinion hat right now. This, for the most part, just felt like a love fest. We do a lot of this work across a lot of different industries. The feedback from the stakeholders of Chelan County PUD was, it was just so positive. They had so many very, very kind things to say. There was such high regard for the work that the PUD is doing in the community, for the level of engagement, and there was a lot of gratitude that people lived in a community that had a PUD like Chelan County. So that's me putting on my opinion hat, but I do a lot of these, and it really stood out to us. I think in the interest of time, Steve, unless there's anything else specifically that you want me to call out, I want to make sure and leave some time for Q&A. I think the last slide that I'll talk about, unless there's something you want me to go back to, the last slide that I'll talk about is slide number 26, which is the priority diagram. We're always careful to introduce this by saying this is not Burke Business Intelligence telling Chelan County PUD what your priorities should be. But it is an interesting way of looking at the data that we've gathered, because what we've presented here is essentially a potentially perfect score multiplied by the importance and the actual performance score, which gives you then just an amplified view of the gaps. And so typically, if there are enormous problems, they'll rise very high above the average, and there will be a very high average on the priority diagram. What I can tell you about this priority diagram is an average of 9.7 is one of the lowest averages we have ever seen. And so with that as the background to this, you could look at question number 5, the PUD takes your concerns and requirements into consideration. That has an average here on the priority diagram of 14.8. For a public utility district, that's where we would expect there to be some tension because there are so many different stakeholders that ask things of the PUD. The other issues, the other two that are the highest above the line, that was number 5, considers your concerns and requirements. Number 2, understands your concerns and number 4, I'm rushing too much here. Number 4, the PUD understands your concerns and requirements. And then number 8, the PUD clearly communicates its policies. Those are the other two that rise furthest above the line. I would say with number 8, I'm pretty sure I know where those come from. There were a couple of comments that were constructive. They were fairly specific from some folks on policy issues. They really wanted the PUD to communicate more openly so that they could coordinate better. And I don't know any more background than that, but I'm pretty sure that that's where those responses come from. With the other two, number 4 and number 5, you know, that's where we would expect to find tension, again, from all the different constituencies that are asking things of the PUD. But I will close by saying I'm going to anticipate a couple of questions that typically happen with regard specifically to performance scores. We do this work across a number of different industries. The client that I'm conducting the assessment for right now, CBRE Group, is the largest commercial real estate firm on the planet. We do work for pipelines, for energy firms, for financial services firms. And so what we're often asked when people are seeing an assessment of ours for the first time is, can you compare our performance to other groups and can you, you know, other kinds of industries, and can you compare our performance to other people within our industry? And there are really two answers. The first answer is that because each of these assessments is bespoke, it is designed exclusively from the perspective of the folks that we're interviewing, and it's constantly being revised based on whether or not what's important to them changes. It's not really possible to do a literal apples-to-apples comparison because, again, each one is going to be keyed to the constituencies that we're speaking with. However, our view, we would argue, is that it really is apples to apples, because what you're comparing in each instance is, how is this firm performing compared to what's most important to the people that they're serving? And if you look at it from that perspective, this is probably the truest measure that there is of satisfaction, because you're asking about all the issues that are most important to those stakeholders from their perspective. So with that said, I can tell you that this performance score of 8.9 for a public utility is Hall of Fame. This is the highest performance score that we have ever recorded in the 30 years of doing this work for a public utility. It is also among the highest scores of any of the assessments that we have done over the last 30 years. So, again, putting on my opinion hat here for just a moment, if I were the folks at Chelan County PUD, I would be making some posters and some T-shirts and putting things up on the wall. That's my bit. I'm open for questions. Once again, I've shocked you into silence.
Commissioners, while you give this some thought, I just take a second to say this is the fourth time we've done this here, and for me, it's probably close to the 10th time I've been involved in one of these, and they are they're really outstanding results, and they reflect work across the entire organization, because these stakeholder relationships occur in lots of different places. They don't just occur at the senior level, or the board level. They occur with all folks at all levels in our staff. So I think we can feel good about the fact that this is reflective of an organization-wide performance that is very high. Having said that, the way you get to these kind of scores is focus and intention. And what we have done in the past is established a protocol that we go through all of the survey results individually, even the ones that are really high. There are usually comments in which there's an interest in follow-up. So we go through them, identify where there's a comment that deserves follow-up, and then assign an accountable person to accomplish that follow-up. And I think that's helped us in terms of improving our scores through time as well. So just be aware that that will happen, that there will be conversation around how do we continue to find ways to be able to improve. And it's not a, well, this is really good, we can rest on our laurels, we can continue to do better, and we will seek to do so. With that, I'd turn it back to the board.
Thank you, Steve. Commissioners, any comments, thoughts, discussion items on the stakeholder survey? Hearing none, Steve.
President Arsenault. Yeah.
Yes, Commissioner Bowles.
Just a comment. It's to the gentleman who delivered the report to us. Thank you for the compliments and. Perhaps where we stand over time. In the spirit of continual improvement, it still makes me itchy that there are those areas where we need to reach out and improve and do that. And I guess what I appreciate most about this is it seems pretty clear and direct to me where we need to make those improvements. And with the creative and intelligent staff that we have, they will come up with ways to respond and get us in the right directions and correct those areas where we need to be stronger, at the same time maintaining a high level of standards. So, the problem with dealing with perfectionists is, when it's good enough. And I don't think we ever want to get to the point where we think we're good enough. But, again, I appreciate the fact that this points us in a direction, and thank you very much.
Good comments, Dennis. Thank you. Anyone else like to make a comment?
This is Steve McKenna.
Yes.
Go ahead. One, again, thank you for a great presentation. Very informative. I have to admit, when the whole music came on, I thought that was some new way to present over the internet, and I thought, well, that's interesting, and then it kept getting louder and louder. So you might think about that for future over-the-phone conversations. That music kind of came in and added to it. But on a serious note, I want to appreciate the leadership and the work of our staff at the PUD. I like the fact that we can get into those detailed comments from individuals who agree to allow us to know what their names are and for staff to go in and delve further into continued human performance improvement, and I see that as an opportunity just for continuous growth. That kind of balances off that question of, well, how high can those scores go? The reality is that really doesn't, I don't want to say negative, it really doesn't matter. At some point, some of those scores are going to come down just because. But what's most important is the effort by the organization and staff for continuous human performance improvement. And, that's great. I appreciate the efforts of the people who have spent some time to help us improve and give us some feedback. And great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Any other thoughts or comments? no other comments, Steve, would you like to move on to the quarterly electric load growth update?
I would. Thank you, Joel, very much for joining us today, and we look forward to working with you again in the future.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, and I will take my leave. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks. Yeah, I'd like to turn it over to Chad Rissman and Andy Wendell to give us the quarterly electric load growth update.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, staff. Steve, how's my audio?
You're good.
Okay. Today, we are giving our July 6, 2020 quarterly electrical load update. With me is Chad Rissman, Director of Engineering and Asset Management, and we also have Lindsay Mons, Business Manager for Customer Utilities. Both will be having a part in the presentation. Moving to slide two, the reason why we are here today, of course, we'll give you a quick briefing on the load forecast. We'll take a look at active projects in our planning spectrum at this point in time. We'll talk about what's going on with the Wenatchee foothills, in particular the residential development in those foothills, in addition to other areas around Wenatchee. And then we'll talk a little bit about what we're doing as a follow-up to the strategic planning process, and specifically looking at capital infrastructure costs. So just a reminder, there's no action by the board today, but we always appreciate your feedback. Moving to the next slide. This slide is titled The 10-Year Load Forecast Change. I would just remind folks that this view is net of energy conservation plans. So essentially, we gave an update on the load forecast in late December, again in March of 2020, and now again in June. And you can see that there is no change to our base case. We are forecasting 26 average megawatts over the next 10-year period. Which translates into just over a 1% load growth. Again, that is energy, and that is over a 10-year horizon. Some things to note specific to this most current forecast, that, again, there's no change since March. And the base case for our projections are looking at an average economic development. We weren't certain what COVID was going to bring in that spectrum in terms of economic development. But at this point in time, there's no indicators that suggest that we'll have any material changes in the immediate future. I would note that the Diamond Foundry and their work to ramp up to a 17 average megawatt for a base and a 19 megawatt for a peak, that is a significant portion of that 26 average megawatts over the next 10-year horizon. So we're working with the Diamond Foundry from a planning perspective to watch and see how those loads are changing. If we do see changes, then we will update the forecast accordingly. Next slide. This is a view that we like to share in the quarterly load update. This slide is titled Utility Services Meter Counts by System. What you're seeing at the top is the electric system, a consolidation of all commercial, residential, and industrial meters by count. What we've seen since March of 2020 is an additional 131 new electric meters in our system. For the water system, we've seen an increase in 24 new meters and no new wastewater meters as of May of 2020. So you can see that even with the unique COVID period that we've been in, we're still having new connections on all of our systems. We'll move to the next slide. This is a view that we've shown in the past. This is really a culmination of a lot of new residential development that is projected and planned for the Wenatchee area. You can go back. There we go. So the view shows about 10 new developments that we have been in conversations with developers and or have received formal applications. The ones that are highlighted are applications that we are actively working on, looking at infrastructure impact, in particular the Philippi Farms residential development off of Fifth Street. One of the more active projects is the Triad development in the Wenatchee Foothills up off of the end of Maple Street. There's some activity out in Sunny Slope, and then as well as at the foot of Fifth Street here in Wenatchee, multifamily housing complex in the planning arena at this point in time. What I wanted to mention here is that although these developments don't necessarily translate into significant impacts on our load forecast from an energy standpoint, we do look at these very closely, how they impact our electric delivery systems, and transmission, distribution, and substations from a peak standpoint, and my colleague Chad is going to be touching a little bit more on those impacts as he talks about substations. So next slide. This is a list of active projects in planning today. We try to keep these updated. A few things to note here is the city of Wenatchee has been planning to remodel the new federal building or the federal building. They have some tenants in there as well. So we've been working very closely with them to ensure that the electric service into that facility is able to meet their new operations as well as tenant offering. There are some new apartment complexes in the planning spectrum for Leavenworth. We do have some interest in adding some additional load to the Winton Mill complex located up near Colt Corner. There's an existing industrial customer there, and they're looking at expanding some loads in that particular area for some small industrial activity as well. And, of course, you see several housing, residential housing complexes and developments in addition to some new charging stations planned in the Leavenworth area, as well as some aspirations for new charging stations in Cashmere. So these are some new active projects that we're very much in the planning and infrastructure planning and coordination with those developers at this point in time. And you can see from a peak standpoint, that translates into just over 8 megawatts from a peak demand standpoint. So the next slide shows projects that have moved out of that planning arena and into more of a construction phase. So these loads haven't necessarily come online, but we anticipate them ramping up over the next 12 months. So you can see there's a variety of hotels and some commercial activity in there as well. And again, from a planning and infrastructure planning perspective, we look largely at the peak demand and the impact on the electrical infrastructure. So the next slide, I think we're going to transfer over to my colleague Chad Risman, and he'll walk us through some of the substation activities in Wenatchee. So Chad?
Thank you, Andy. Chad Risman, Director of Distribution Asset Management. Good morning, Commissioners and public. So thinking about the most significant capacity required to be online in order to serve some of these loads that we're watching, one of the areas in particular that we're spending some time on here that Andy mentioned is this western Wenatchee, and the west Wenatchee foothills area. An understanding somewhere between 1,500 to 2,000 potential premises in that area. We're getting more specific information about what that looks like and potential desire of timing, likely to occur over the next 10 years as these lots get developed. However, we need to be positioned in order to, we need to be in a position where if the development were to accelerate, we would also be able to accelerate. So substation capacity in the area is limited. Looking on the screen here, and the red stars there shows a percentage next to substations, existing substations, and They're all fairly high. Now, that is the peak winter time at 0 degrees Fahrenheit forecast. That's when our peak is. Generally, they're operating about 50% of what is shown here on the screen. So the question is timing the appropriate amount of capacity for the right time when the growth is. So the first part of that is looking at potential sites for a new substation in this western Wenatchee area. You can see in the lower part of that slide in the blue star says future Castle Rock. The district has purchased and has done some pre-planning for a substation on the southern end by Castle Rock along Western Avenue there. But based on our planning and additional information about these lots in the western Wenatchee area, we're going to need additional substation capacity more northern to that. So we've added on our five-year plan, siting and starting conversations with stakeholders about the potential location for a substation. So that has now popped onto our five-year plan. The actual construction of the substation and purchasing of the property and things will be timed along with the how quickly these lots get developed and things. So the key there is to try to have the capacity online so that it meets the timelines of the load growth. Next slide. Taking a step back, looking at countywide, in order to meet that 26 average megawatts of load growth in the 1.1%, there are several substations throughout the county that were in various phases of construction. The top one there is Omi Substation. That's the one that's active right now. That's out in the old stations area. That's going to replace an existing substation and then double in capacity to serve new loads added in that area, specifically some of the development. And then the next one down is Diamond Foundry Substation that's occurring here in North Wenatchee. That's scheduled to be online sometime later this late next year. And then these other substations are consistent with what we're watching for load growth and the load slides that Andy showed. And they're in various phases, plus or minus where they're shown in their quartile for what year. I would want to note before we move away from the slide a couple of things. See at the bottom there, we've added the Wenatchee Foothills doing some property evaluation and planning. Might have an idea of a potential site towards the end of the year that we may want to act on or at least recommend pursuing. The other thing is this Omi substation in the COVID environment, the engineer's estimate for a couple of the contracts was a little higher than what we previously planned. So as we receive those bids and get an understanding of what the actual costs are, it's possible that we may be coming to the board and presenting a change in the budget as related to the Omi substation. So just a little bit of a potential preview there. We don't want to act on that until we understand what the actual bids come in. We have all the bids so we can really pin down what the estimate to actual will be. That is all for me. Next slide. From here, Lindsay's going to talk a little bit more about the work that's being put into the infrastructure cost recovery. Take it away, Lindsay.
Thanks, Chad. Good morning, Commissioners. Lindsay Mons, Business Manager and Customer Utilities. As Chad mentioned, we are adding a special topic today to the load growth presentation related to infrastructure cost recovery. As Chad and Andy talked through, we do have several new substations in the plan, as well as developments driving additional growth. So the question always becomes, how do we pay for that growth? And this was something that was discussed during the strategic planning process. So this is a follow-up to that as well. The implementation item from the strategic plan is that we would maintain a policy for line extensions which are paid for by the requester, as is currently the case, but then also consider developing a policy to kind of extend that program into the substations and transmission costs that are associated with development. Those are the really big ticket items that come with growth that are currently paid for through rates. So this is a discussion of, and Rebecca, next slide, please, of our different options to address that cost recovery, whether we continue to pay for it through rates, which could drive rate increases in the future, or other options that other utilities have taken a look at, which include looking to developers to cover more of that specific cost of their substations, be it through siting or all the way through development of substations. Third option, they're recovering those costs through a standard fee for all new connections. So this is an approach that Mason PUD 3 took a few years back. It seems to be going well. And that is creating a cost or a fee, a connection fee that's paid for at the time of each new connection. Regardless of where in our county they would connect, it would be part of funding growth for their new load. And then, of course, the fourth option being a combination of the three. So maybe partially in rates, partially in a fee, working with developers on potentially siting substations, things like that. So Rebecca, next slide. Thank you. So our planned actions from here, we're currently contracted with FCS Group, looking at what would be an appropriate fee or a maximum fee associated with the growth and expansion cost recovery. And that is probably going to look like a few different things depending on how far into our system we would want cost recovery. Is it just through the substation? Is it all the way back into transmission? They even gave us options of going all the way back into generation. So those are discussions that are currently underway that we will continue discussing with the board as we go. We're also evaluating the different options as far as, you know, what sort of rate impacts would look like so that we can present to you and let you know for your consideration what might be the best approach for us. And those future presentations will be coming this this summer and into early fall as we get those results from FCS Group. And next slide, Rebecca. Through this whole process, we will, of course, continue to take into account the guidance that we've received as far as rate and fee setting goes, things like fair and equitable transactions or fees, looking for cost recovery, stability, and sufficiency of those revenues, all the items that we always look at when we look into rates. We'll also be doing some outreach along the way with various impacted developers or potentially impacted to kind of get their thoughts on things. And then, you know, other internal and external stakeholders in the process. So with that, if you have any questions, we're happy to take them.
Commissioners, any questions?
Lindsay, help me. Maybe you said it with FCS. What that is, what the acronym is?
That is a very good question. I will have to find out. That's just the company name. We've always referred to them, FCS Group. But I'll find out for you, Dennis.
Okay, thank you. I'm feeling not so alone now.
Yeah.
So it is. It's just a consultant firm that we're employing to help us with the work.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much for your presentation. Appreciate the information.
Yeah, maybe I'll just finish with one thought that, you know, a lot of times we talk about a policy of growth pays for growth. As we have a lot of growth in Chelan County, that's raising questions for us about how to best interpret that. And so the goal here is to get better guidance from the board about how staff should move forward. And so there will be a lot of conversation with the board about this as we move forward. With that, we'll move to agenda item 5, which is Powerhouse 2 design build agreement. John Sagerser will be making this presentation.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Sagerser. I'm the Rock Island Engineering and Project Manager, Department Manager, as well as the Program Manager for the Powerhouse 2 Rehabilitation Projects. I'll just be providing a status update on the request for proposal process, as well as the design-build agreement. Next. So today we'll actually be presenting a draft resolution requesting authorization to execute contract 1810 with Alstrom Hydro Renewables, LLC, for the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 generating unit rehabilitation. Again, this is just a redraft for your information, and no action is requested today. We will also be discussing the different parts of the contract that we will be asking you to execute. This includes the design-build agreement itself, as well as an exhibit for pre-construction services, and just some, but not all, of the technical specifications. Next. As a reminder, this is really a culmination of a lengthy selection process that started with a request for qualifications back in January of 2019. Proposals from three design builders were received, including cost information, in January of 2020. We were also here back in June 15th, where you recall during that meeting we went through all the different parts of the design-build contract, including things like extended warranty, the guaranteed maximum price amendments or GMP amendments, and some of these things that will not be part of the documents that we're requesting to execute with this resolution. Next. So with the resolution, we will be requesting execution of the design-build agreement itself. Again, this is the foundational document for the contract. It covers all the main terms and conditions for the entire project, which is estimated to be approximately 10 years. All other documents in the contract become exhibits to or fit underneath this, the design-build agreement. It does include key terms such as indemnity, ownership of data, intellectual property, claims for provisions, and other things. It also provides for liquidated damages, incentives, and sharing of cost savings. It's important to note, though, that the details associated with those particular items will be included with each GMP amendment. Again, the guaranteed maximum price amendments, or GMP amendments, are kind of include the scope, schedule, budget for each individual unit. It includes all the procurement, manufacturing, construction, turnover, commissioning, everything for each particular unit, as well as the specific details for liquidated damages and incentives. This allows us to adjust, if desirable, for the unique conditions associated with each individual unit. The design-build agreement, though, also goes through and defines key milestones associated with the contract and the work, things like the trial operation period, substantial completion, final acceptance, the different warranty periods, and when each warranty period starts. Next. With the resolution, we would also be requesting to execute the first exhibit to the design-build agreement and to be executed along with the agreement. This is what we call Exhibit A and is really for the pre-construction services. Now, pre-construction services govern the design portion of the design-build project. It's important to note that the design, as well as the design process, is really the responsibility of the contractor. They are required to work collaboratively with the district, but it's ultimately up to them to ensure that the design is complete and it meets all the goals and objectives of the project. Pre-construction services is intended really to be a one-time event, as the design will be utilized for all 8 units. Now, the design will not be fully completed within pre-construction services, as there will be ongoing design work Subsequent units would have minor adjustments as we incorporate lessons learned from previous units, as well as make adjustments for the uniqueness of each unit. But the goal is to have things really consistent from unit to unit. It's also during this time, as part of pre-construction services, that we will work collaboratively with the contractor to develop the schedule, milestones, and guaranteed maximum price for the first unit guaranteed maximum price, or GMP, amendment. Next. We'll also be requesting that some of the technical specifications be executed along with the design-build agreement. Roughly a third of the specifications govern the design process and how we interact with the contractor. These include specifications for things like safety, schedule, coordination and meetings, administrative requirements, or document sharing, as well as reference codes and standards. The remaining two-thirds of the specifications will be developed as part of the pre-construction services or the design process. This includes things like the turbine and generator technical specifications, rehabilitation requirements for balance of plant equipment, cooling systems, and other systems required to run the units. Next. So this is a visual. We showed this to you last time when we met with you in June, and kind of shows how all of these documents fit together. As you can see, we're really building the umbrella that cover over the guaranteed maximum price amendment for all the unit work. And we're really requesting execution, or will be requesting execution, for the biggest part, or the framework of the umbrella. Next. So our next steps will be returned to you in late July, requesting action on the resolution to execute the design-build agreement. This would include the pre-construction services as well as some of the technical specifications. We will continue to work on the extended warranty, defining that and creating contract documents associated with that, and would request or expect to have an exhibit to be executed as part of the design-build agreement in later of 2020. We are also exploring some options with the contractor and with stakeholders to procure some long lead items, such as generator stator windings, core laminations, and other components that would be early ordering would be necessary in order to maintain the first unit outage. If we choose to do something along those lines, we would be back with you in fall of 2020. We'll also continue working on the first unit GMP amendment, which could be as early as fall 2020 as well, but is most likely expected around the beginning of 2021. And with that, I will open it up to questions from you.
Commissioners, any questions on the design build agreement concept? Hearing none, Steve, I guess we can move on.
Steve.
Yes, Steve.
John, I just wanted to tell you I appreciate the update.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
It's a very complicated matter, and I'm glad to have the brain power that we have at the PUD who can make it seem simple when it's really not. So thanks, John.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, this has certainly been a long journey, and we're getting close to the first big step in terms of a new contract. So that'll be coming back either the next board meeting or the board meeting following that. Next up is the Stehekin Battery Project. I want to invite Andrew Cassell, who will be making this presentation. Recall this follows up on previous conversations we had with the board around the battery concept and a plan that where we were going to go out and do outreach in Stehekin. This was pre-COVID, and so now we're dealing in the how are we going to do outreach and proceed with this project in a COVID world. Andrew?
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. So, good morning, commissioners. Also, Jim will also is also on the phone in case there are any questions he can answer as well. But we're both here to provide you with an update on Stehekin. If we go to slide two, we'll provide an update on the battery system, where we are in the process of obtaining pricing. We'll provide an update on recent discussions with the National Park Service. Jim met with them in Stehekin. And then the larger team, including Andy, Tika, Jenna, Lyle, and myself, had a conference call with them following. Finally, we'll provide you with our proposed community engagement plan, taking into account COVID-19 and the need for social distancing. And this is informational only. As always, though, we welcome your comments as we move forward through the presentation. Slide three. So the Jim is currently working on the RFP development and designing the interconnection of the battery to the hydro plant. To support him on this and to provide a peer review, we have hired a consulting firm who has designed and installed a battery system under very similar circumstances to ours in Alaska. That project also integrated a small hydro system and a battery system. We felt that it was a good use of some time as well as some funds to make sure that we get the RFP right, and that when potential bidders are bidding on it, they have all the information to give us the best possible pricing on that. COVID-19 has slowed down the bid process. We expect to come back to the board for direction at the end of October once we have pricing. And then if the board direction is to move forward, we would consider installation. Installation would occur in the 2021 year, sometime probably summertime of 2021. We go to slide four. This is just a more detailed schedule. This is just to let you know where things will fall. So right now we're preparing the documents. We will review bids, and at that point is when we would come back to the board and seek direction to either move forward or not. And then if the decision is to maybe move forward, you can see how the rest of the schedule lines out into 2021. So I'll move to slide five, our National Park Service engagement. So a couple weeks ago, Jim met with National Parks staff in Stehekin to review plans regarding the proposed fire camp. This was a good opportunity to meet with them, and Jim took that opportunity to provide them with an overview of our system constraints, providing them with the information we provided to the board back in the February timeframe, working through where we are, how much capacity we actually have available or not. And just really did a good job of explaining the challenges that we have in the Stehekin area. He was also able to provide them with non-electric alternatives for the most energy-intensive activities like space heating, water heating, pumping. We then had a follow-up call, which occurred with the larger internal team and the NPS team to continue the discussion. And although I think there's still some ground to be made up, I think progress is being made in regarding how important it is to minimize energy demand up there. And then we're continuing that engagement with the NPS team, and that will continue. That will continue on, and the whole team is engaged with that as well. We move to slide six. This is our proposed Stehekin community engagement plan. So where we are now is we're providing the board with the update. In mid-July, we're going to update our webpage. We want to put all the current statuses, revisions of timelines, when we think decision points will be made. Also in mid-July, we propose to send an email to Stehekin stakeholders, providing that status update with the revised schedule as well. We'll also let them know of an online open house where they'll have an opportunity to provide feedback. And at the end of July, the engagement strategy for meeting and obtaining input from our customers while also, you know, meeting the social distancing needs and requirements is what's called an online open house. So it's a web-based tool that's designed to walk a customer through the project or the information in a manner similar to an open house where you would have boards and you would walk through it in sort of a progression of starting out with the project background and then ending in, we're seeking information from you. So we plan to leverage this technology to hold this online open house, and it'll occur over a three-week period, approximately. And with that, we're hoping to gather feedback, provide a survey, gather feedback from the community. And so in August, we would provide the board with an update on this, the outreach, program, and including an overview of all the comments and feedback that we received from this online open house. And then in September, we would continue to update our webpage with this information. And then also in September, we would continue engaging with the community, emailing them the responses and the feedback that we received. And then based on that feedback and based on direction from the board, developing those next steps forward. So slide 7 is our next steps. We'll continue, of course, working on the battery solution, getting pricing, making sure that the board has information it needs to make a good decision. We will continue working and having discussions with the National Park Service staff. As they build this facility up there, we want to make sure that we're heavily engaged with that so we can provide them with information and options, different options that will minimize their energy usage and needs up there. And then we'll schedule and hold the virtual open house at the end of this month and into August. And with that, open up for questions.
Commissioners, any questions for Andrew or Jim?
So this is Randy. I don't really have any questions. I've just got a big kudos to you guys for working through this process. You're looking at a creative solution to a challenging problem, and now the problem's complicated with COVID and going through all of that engagement. So I just want to say I'm excited about what you're doing here, and at the same time, I want to, Andrew and Jim, I want to call out your group. Andrew, you know well that last week your group, I threw out another challenge dealing with the heat pump, and that customer is absolutely singing the praises of your staff and how they interacted with him. You guys are just doing an outstanding job, and thank you very much.
Thank you for that feedback. Appreciate it. And with regards to coming up with a creative solution for the community engagement, I just want to call out Jenna and Tika on Andy's staff. They've looked out and saw what other people were doing and brought this creative solution to us. I appreciate that on their end. And Josh Mitchell did a great job with his customer, working through questions, working with the contractor to make sure that we resolve it in a manner that is that meets our program policies, but it also meets the expectations of our customers. So appreciate that feedback, and I'll send that on to Josh.
And if I could add one more thing, I really appreciate that Andrew and Josh not only have addressed the concern of that individual customer, but have turned it into a lesson learned so it can avoid the likelihood of having the same situation occur again.
That's a double win. Good news, Steve. Good job, Andrew.
Thank you.
So, Andrew, I have one quick question for you, and this has to do with the needs of the Park Service. And can you give me some kind of quantifiable level or degree of their need?
So, Andrew, how about if I take a shot at that, because I'm aware of some other things that have come in, too. If the Park Service were to expand and in the way that they are thinking about, and if they were to be all electric, it would be a very substantial, potentially a doubling of the peak load up there. Not so much an energy load, because this would only be used when there were wildfire events, but the peak load would be a significant problem for us. But this is where the outreach that Andrew and Jim has been doing is quite helpful, because there's already been some conversation about that would be a significant problem, and it's our understanding the Park Service is looking at alternatives, including propane usage, and maybe some other things that they might be able to do to help us to manage the load and to maybe even manage generation. So a lot more conversation to come. If it were to occur without the kinds of conversations that have gone on, it would be a really big concern for us. But because we're having these conversations, we believe there's a good chance that we can come to hopefully some resolution that doesn't make this a serious problem.
Well, and thank you for that, Steve. And really, you just kind of summarized where it was I wanted to go with this question, and that is that as we talked earlier in today's meeting about the stakeholder feedback, and we talked about the outreach and communication, Andrew, you are a model of that outreach and that communication within our community, and sometimes we, even though it might be sticky issues to deal with in terms of conservation and how do we get there, really takes a lot of scratching your head and coming up with creative ideas, and you're just the right guy and your staff to do that. So I just want to say kudos, Andrew. Good job.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other comments? Steve, hearing no more comments, it is 11:21. What would you like to
I have two suggestions, Commissioner Arsenault. First, we do have quite a few manager's items, and we've got some of them that we could tee up this morning and would like to move to those. But I would like to make one other suggestion. I know that we had at least one customer on the line, and normally that we wouldn't open for public comment until later in the afternoon. But given that we've got some free time now, if there may be an opportunity here just to ask for if there's any public comment that anyone would like to offer, for efficiency's sake and courtesy.
All right. Well, this is a good time to do that. Commissioners, if you are in agreement, I will open up the phones at this time for members of the public who are encouraged to make comment and ask questions. As we open the phones, I would like to remind you, please state your name and address for the record, and also if you'd be kind enough to limit your comments to 3 minutes so that others could have an opportunity to
I guess I'll step up if everybody's ready.
Yes, please. Please state your name and address for the record.
Yeah, David Allender, One Moonbeam Road, Manson, Washington.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, I've got an issue here. We sent an email in to you folks back on the 18th of June regarding the status of the smart meter installations for our account and the rest of the world here around Wenatchee. And asking about an opt-out, and we got a response from Pat O'Hara. I'll just go and read it to you. Good afternoon, David. Smart meters are scheduled to be installed during 2021 and 2022. We are still working on the policies for the opt-out, and they will be announced in advance of the meter installations. Please let me know if you need any further assistance. Okay, well, we got that, and then lo and behold, a few days ago, I'm out looking at our meter, and we've got a smart meter. And I also see on your website, it says that we would be notified before any smart meters were ever installed. So I want to know what's going on, and I guess that's the first thing I got to address.
Well, maybe I'll take a shot at that to start. So at least the smart meters that we're talking about have not been purchased yet. The contract has not been completed, and we don't have any of the new smart meters. It's possible that if there was a meter failure, that we would have been replacing with the one-way meters that we've been using for, I can't remember how many years, more than five. So what we'd like to do, though, is make sure that I've got your name and your address, and we will check into the specifics of this and get back with you and make sure that we have common understanding of the current status at your home.
Okay, so this it appears to be, electronic in nature. It's definitely not my old meter, and I'm not not aware of any meter outage ever having happened. So this was obviously installed without our knowledge. And it looks to me like it's, you know, it looks like a smart meter to me. Am I mistaken in what these things look like?
Well, I can't say without being able to see it. I do know that the smart meter program, we haven't reached the point where we're actually purchasing them yet. So we don't own any of them. The kind that we've been talking about for the last couple of years that we've been moving towards. So, but like I say, we have been using one-way meters for quite a few years, and it's possible that that's what happened, but I don't really know. What we need to do is just check into it and get a better understanding. So that's where it would help to get your name and address, and I'll commit to you that we will get back to you certainly this week.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great. I'd like to really just have it replaced with one of the old standard meters, if you guys don't mind. So, yeah, and then also I see online where you've had some comments about these smart meters. It's a great concern. The more I learn, the more terrified I get about it. And I see, like, the second comment, the most second recent PDF that you can download at the site from some customers. They had made a nice little PDF document and signed it, and it's basically threatening litigation and that sort of thing. I'm sure everyone's aware of that. I also have one. I'm going to be collecting some signatures. It's of the same nature. It's got a little bit maybe sharper teeth. So I'm going to be doing that. I just want to alert everyone to that, that we are going to be taking some action to definitely make sure that we don't have these smart meters in Chelan County.
Okay.
Okay, so, yeah, I guess that's it for me. I just would like to definitely request that we get our old meter back. When they came up and put it on, I was here, and the gentleman that put it on said that he knew of us, and they wouldn't put any other kind of a meter on, just the old one. So I'm a little, you know, definitely going to look forward to hearing back on that and getting this one replaced.
David, if you'd be kind enough to give us, please, your phone number and your address so that we can get back to you.
Sure, sure. It's 1 Moonbeam Road, Manson, 98831. Phone number is 509-670-3022, and David Allender.
And David, how do you spell your last name, please?
Allender, A-L-L-E-M-B-E-R.
Good. Thank you very much, David.
Yes, thank you. And thanks for letting me jump in here. I appreciate that, guys.
No problem. Thank you very much. You will be hearing back from us.
Fantastic. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, with that, I would like to go to manager's items. And we had Andrew on the line, and he had a couple of manager's items for him. So we're going to just jump right to him. Andrew, would you like to take it away? Andrew, do we still have you there? Okay, we're going to check on Andrew and see if we can get him back here. In the interim, I wanted to go to Eric. Would you like to do an update on the motion, the board motion from the last meeting?
Sure, Steve, thanks. Commissioners, Eric Walquist, General Counsel. So, just wanted to take a moment and provide an update to you all regarding the efforts that we've been taking here internal to the district to follow up with the motion that was made at the last meeting regarding contributing $25,000 to Chelan County COVID relief efforts with a focus on educational outreach, community outreach and information, as well as the masks and mask distribution efforts. After a little bit of phone tag, commissioners, I was able to connect with a delightful individual at the county named Kathy, who has shared information with me about the process that they have there at the county for taking contributions of this type. It will work for us, so she has asked us to merely send over a warrant with the appropriate amount attached to it and a cover letter directing or requesting that they spend the money consistent with the board's intent as expressed during the last board meeting. We had to jump a few hurdles here internally in terms of process to get everything set. I think we are going to be set to go here in very short order. The warrant should be printed today. I might have a draft of the letter over, need to review that with Steve, and then once ready, we will get that letter executed and the money sent over to the county. The county already has these efforts in play, and they will simply take this money and add it to those appropriate measures. I'm going a little bit from memory here, but the money will go into their emergency response fund and be sent consistent with spent consistent with our requests on mask provisioning. The county already has a supply chain set up to handle those requests, and then to community public information education outreach on the COVID matter. They have a number of opportunities they have set up at the county, including, as I recall, a recent agreement with Our Valley, Our Future, focused specifically on Latino Hispanic community here in town. So we will finish that up hopefully today. Tomorrow, I would think, at the latest, and we will get that sent over, at which point we will have met, I believe, the board's expectations as expressed by the motion. Questions about that effort from any or all of you?
Commissioners, any thoughts, comments? Eric, I'll just say good job. I appreciate your work putting this together and dogging down the contacts and seeing it to fruition. So thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. We're not quite across the finish line yet, but I hope to be here in very short order.
Cool.
I might just add real quickly that I know the working group for the health board made its recommendation last week, and the board accepted that recommendation to not proceed with a waiver request at this time. But associated with that were a number of recommendations to do more in the areas of outreach to vulnerable populations, to support mask strategy. So I think the timing of the board's action at the last board meeting has turned out to be quite prescient, and that this will be valuable in terms of trying to build the case for being able to proceed with a waiver and, most importantly, try to reduce the level of infection in the community. So it's worked out well. I believe Andrew is back, and so Andrew would like to turn it over to you for a couple of manager's items.
Thank you. Yes, of course, you walk away for 1 second and you get called upon. So thank you, and good morning again, commissioners. And so the first update I'm going to provide on is our Chelan TUD solar program, and this is kind of, Jim and I will both be here to provide you with a brief update on what we're thinking about for heading in a little different direction than what we have in the past, and thinking about our solar installations in a little bit different way. So we go to slide 2. We are up here to update you on our retail solar program. We'll provide a review of our current SNAP program. Then we'll review updated goals for our program. We'll review updated solar program concepts. We'll have some next steps. No decisions needed, information only. Again, though, as I mentioned earlier in the last presentation, we're always open for comments and ideas. So the current program is called the Sustainable Natural Alternative Power Program, and this was designed to provide our customers with an opportunity to purchase qualifying alternative energy resources in compliance with a RCW 1929A. The SNAP program provided them with provided customers with the ability to put money into a fund that would then, at the end of the year, be distributed to the producers in the program based on how much energy they produced over that year. The annual payments to those producers have been decreasing. We've had more installations occur, and then also we've had some decrease in the donations from customers. And so those two things have caused the payment that used to be you know, about $1 per kilowatt hour down to about 2 cents. And so looking at that, we're seeing, well, is there a better way to do this? One, this is administratively burdensome. And really the access to the program is limited to high wage earners, those that can afford to put the solar programs on. It leaves out, you know, a portion of our customer base. And so we're kind of trying to brainstorm ideas on how we can reimagine this program to potentially increase participation among our customers that currently don't have an ability to do that. So if we move to slide number four, so we do have some new program goals. We want to reduce the administrative burden, how much time it takes to keep the program running. We want to value solar generation appropriately. And so if we look at solar generation as a way that can reduce load on our own system, it can be viewed similarly as energy efficiency, in that although there are other different constraints with it, such as, you know, there is a winter time, there is shading. So that little graph over to the right of the slide is a tool that Jim has developed to show, you know, at a certain location, what kind of shading is there, to which we can then identify the amount of, or the estimated amount of kilowatt hours that could be produced at that location. And so we want to take that information and value it appropriately. We want to investigate opportunities for our low-income, high-energy burden participation. And then we also need to comply with our state laws. So those are, as we're looking forward to looking at new programs and new concepts, those are the things that we're keeping in mind. So if we go to slide five, we've got kind of a two-path approach. The one is pretty straightforward, looking at an incentive-based program similar to our energy efficiency program, looking at providing a one-time payment based on what that value is to the utility, and we can use that site-specific modeling combined with energy markets data to ensure that we capture the value that we're paying for, very similar to our energy efficiency program. Now, for the low-income, high-energy burden, we're thinking about, are there ways we can look at and investigate opportunities for low-income participation? One is there a way to have a SNAP-like program where maybe we have, you know, customers voluntarily contribute and use that to provide in some way, and we don't have the details of that yet, in some way to use those funds to help our lower income customers participate in a program. So increasing that participation rate among across the board on our customers. And as we're looking through these, we need to balance our participation with administrative costs. And what I mean by that is, you know, there might be an opportunity for a really low administrative cost, but it only allows three people a year to participate in it. Or there's a way that, well, we get a lot more participation and maybe it increases the cost. So what's that balance? And, you know, we've got some ideas. We're working on a list of different concepts now. We're going to be putting together pros and cons on those and bringing those back to the board some point in the future. And so this is more of a, hey, this is where we're looking at going. We don't have the details yet, but we want to provide the board with an update on what we're thinking. So that does get us to our next steps, slide number six. So we're looking at finalizing the dollars per GW, that incentive level that we're willing to pay for our solar incentive. We have a model developed. You know, Jim has developed a model that's really detailed and it takes into account a lot of information to ensure that we capture that value that what we pay for. So we'll be finalizing that. We want to reach out to our current SNAP participants to discuss potential changes to the current program. You know, some of them have been in the program for, you know, 10 years or more, 15 years, you know, a long, long time. And so we want to make sure we get their input. And so we plan to develop an engagement with them to get their information, to get their thoughts on this. And then we want to develop those low-income options and bring them back to the board for discussion, again, with that goal of balancing our administration with our customer participation. A lot of information pretty quickly in a manager's update. More than happy to answer any questions now. Or if you have questions on this that you think of later, you know, shoot, just send me an email
Thanks, Andrew. Commissioners, any questions for Andrew? Hearing none. Steve, we can move on.
Okay. And again, there'll be more to come on the solar program. Andrew has one more for us. Then, just so he knows, Dan Frazier, you're going to be up next.
Thank you. The next one is just provide an update on some work we've been doing with Link. As some of you are probably well aware of, Link has been won a grant to add in additional charging infrastructure down at their Columbia stations. It's a really great, interesting technology. It's a induction charger, so the buses, as they're coming in, can drive across them and charge while they're there and then leave, so no hooking up anything, no losses there. We also are, so what we've been doing with that grant is it originally was going
Andrew, we just lost you. You still there?
The idea.
Okay. We lost you for just a moment there. Go back one sentence.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nope.
Okay. All right. Perfect. And so, let's see, go back. So what we were thinking was with a battery, they also put into the grant proposal the potential to add a battery storage system there. And the goal of that would be to reduce the demand on the facilities down there, so that when the buses come in, they would actually charge off the battery and then be trickle charged over a longer period of time in between by our system in between the bus charges, thinking that that could be a good idea for them. And so they were excited about that. We were excited about that. But then we had Jim do some modeling again, doing some great interactions with Link, and developed a model showing the financial recovery that they could get off of that. And even with the grant funds, and even if we could provide some incentive based on what it's worth to us, it didn't make sense for them. It did never pay itself off. And so I just want to say thanks to Jim on that, because he reached out to them and really helped them make a decision that was the best financially for them as well. And so what they are trying to do is that I know that they're working on trying to reallocate those grant dollars to be able to buy additional buses to work on their system. And so I just wanted to provide that information as an update. Jim, if you're on, do you have anything to add to that? He's been the one that's really been spearheading this effort and the engagement with Link. So, all right. He might not have made it back on. Any questions on that one?
Andrew, this is Steve McKenna. As I recall, that was a sizable amount of buses that Link will be purchasing. Is it? Do I have that right? It's 13 buses?
They purchased 10, and I think they're looking at purchasing some additional buses. I don't have the exact number, but I can get that for you. Okay. But yes, they have. They've gotten those, and then those in line with the new charging down at Columbia Station to be able to electrify, at least to start with, the close-in routes, and then potentially looking to be able to electrify longer routes.
That was my next question, if it was what routes that would encompass, and so it would be closer in.
Yeah, that would be the closer in routes to start. Yes, to start, but they are looking at potential ways to reach out further away. You know, whether it's adding a similar at some point in the future induction charger at some other location, or whatever the other technologies are. I know they would like to electrify more of their fleet and more of their routes, but right now I think it's focused on the core.
Great. Thanks, Andrew.
And I might just add a couple of things to that. First of all, the earlier presentation you saw with respect to load growth, there was a electric charging option in Leavenworth, and I believe that that is something that Link is looking at. This is just in the preliminary stage, but I think that that gets to the additional opportunity someplace in the county to for Link to electrify. Another point I'd like to make is I did have a conversation with Richard DeRoc recently. He was wondering, since the recall that we had supported Link in getting funding from the state to overall support their electrification efforts, he was wondering whether we had something specific that we wanted to do with that funding, since the battery option doesn't look like it's working out economically. I told him no, that we are there just to support them, and he did have some ideas, primarily I think around acquiring buses, but I'm not exactly sure on that. But he's got some ideas, so that hopefully there'll be a way to be able to use those funds that will help to support the electrification effort in the county for Link.
This is Jim White. My apologies. Instead of unmuting, I pressed the hang button. So I don't know what I missed. I've done that.
Jim, I think there was just an invitation if you wanted to add anything. That may be tough to do, having not heard the presentation. So,
that's correct. Carry on.
Okay, with that, I think we are ready to move to our next item. Thank you, Andrew and Jim. And that would be Dan Frazier. Dan, are you there? He may have hit the wrong button as well, so we're going to go to Neil Neratsos. Neil? Neil, are you there? Do you think Dan's ready? Okay. Dan, are you back with us?
I am. Thank you.
Okay, great.
all this technology challenges. Well, good morning, Commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. I have the honor of announcing where the Chelan PUD finished this year in the 100 best fleets, and that was our best finish to date. We actually came in 24th in the country in the 100 best fleets award process, and we've been doing this for about 5 years, and our previous best finish was 58th, so made some great progress this year. Five entities in Washington State finished in the top 100. King County and City of Seattle both participated, and the Bonneville Power Administration finished 53rd, so we did beat them out. What I love about this is it's an award process based on the performance of your fleet, and it's not just policy related, it's cost related, it's accountability. There's 12 categories that the fleet operations are judged on, including accountability, use of technology, and staff development, and those type of things. But Chelan PUD always performs well, and again, this year performed very well in two categories that we take a lot of pride in, because they are they're evidence of our fleet's staff commitment to having a good fleet. And those are quick and efficient turnaround is the category. And really that speaks to our critical asset uptime. One of our metrics that we track within the PUD in terms of our critical operational groups, line operations, central maintenance, generation transmission, is how often their critical assets are down. And so we pay a lot of attention to making sure those are up as much as possible, and we perform very well in that area. And the other one is called doing it right the first time. So we've all taken a vehicle to the dealership, had some work done, only to have the same problem reoccur. That is a point that we try to have never happen. We make sure that before that vehicle is returned to service that we have fixed the problem. So we always rank really high in those two areas, and that's a testament to our group. Lance Knutson and his staff take a lot of pride in the operation of the fleet, and this is just another great award for them to win. And we will do something to celebrate that maybe once the COVID restrictions are eased a little bit, but if you do get a chance to say thanks to the fleet crew, they've done a great job and are really deserving of this reward.
Thanks, Dan. That's really great news. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dan. I believe Neil is available. Neil, you're next up.
Thanks, Steve. So we have some exciting news to share. We got an award from the Public Relations Society of America for our strategic plan for 2020 to 2024. It was in the community relations category. So another great example of our commitment to community engagement and public involvement. So by my count, I think we have 30 to 40 staff and board members involved in this effort. So great, great project for a lot of people throughout the organization. As you know, we had 3,700 customer comments come in, and the icing on the cake is that we not only won in the community relations category, but we won best of show. So among all the applicants to the awards, we were the very top pick. We were up against some pretty strong contenders, Alaska Airlines, Allstate, WashDOT, Department of Ecology, and others. So great award and good involvement by all our staff.
That is great. That speaks volumes about what's going on.
Yeah, that's great.
And I would add, as a relatively new staff, as a new staff member at the time, I also added it was a fantastic project for me to be involved in. I wish that Justin was here too, but again, 30 to 40 staff members and board involved, and a really a great effort. So,
yeah, we'd like to highlight this was Justin's first big project to manage here at the district, and. While lots of people made significant contributions to this, I think it's worth calling out that, for a new role and a new guy coming into the job, this is a real testament to the level of effort and quality that he puts into the work.
Well, good job. Congratulations to Neil and all the staff.
I want to just do one other quick check. I think Mike Coleman said he would most likely not be ready with his item until this afternoon. I'm just going to check and see if he's on the line and ready to go. Okay, not hearing him. So our other items will wait until this afternoon. And I think with that, we're ready to break from the morning session.
Okay, if there are no more comments for the session this morning, we will go ahead and reset the lunch, and we will begin our business session promptly at 1 o'clock this afternoon. We're adjourned.
Welcome to the July 6, 2020 business session of the Chelan County PUD Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for calling in this afternoon. In the spirit of social distancing due to the COVID-19 virus, today's meeting will be conducted by telephone. Members of the public that may be on the phone are encouraged to make comment and ask questions. If you wish to speak, please state your name and address for the record and be kind enough to limit your comments to 3 minutes. I will open phone lines later in today's session for such comment. So, commissioners, as we begin our business session, the first thing on the agenda is the public hearing 2020 for Integrated Resource Plan. Steve, would you like to walk us through this?
Actually, I'm just going to take a second to introduce and say that we've been at this for a while, a number of meetings with the commission. Becky Keating is here to conclude that process here today, so I'll turn it over to her.
Yeah, with our resolution asking for your approval of the 2020 Integrated Resource Plan as drafted and presented on June 15th, 2020.
Hey, commissioners, I would just note that we have not received public comment on either the IRP or the environmental document that is associated with it, the SEPA document that goes with it. And with that, I think that we will turn it back over to the commission.
Thank you, Steve. So, commissioners, do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner Bolt.
I move that we accept a resolution approving the district's 2020 integrated resource plan.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Smith, for seconding that, and thank you, Commissioner Bolt, for making that motion. It's been moved and seconded. Any comment? Well, I would like to say that it's been a lengthy process. It's been a well thought out process, and a great deal of labor has gone into today's motion. So it has been moved. It has been seconded. There's no further comment. All those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed? The ayes have it. So the resolution approving the district's 2020 integrated resource plan has passed. Thank you, Steve.
And thank you to Becky and to Janet.
Thank you.
And Becky and Janet. Good job. So, commissioners, we're going to move on in the agenda for today. We're at that moment in time where we address the consent agenda. Is there a motion to accept that consent agenda?
Mr. President, I would move to approve the consent agenda, which has been modified to include resolutions 10, 11, and 12.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Is there a second?
I second. Steve McKenna.
Thank you, Commissioner McKenna. It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The ayes have it. So we will move on now to the regular agenda. And Steve, would you like to take it from here?
I will. So we'll start with an item 13. This is a resolution authorizing amendment to number 10 to services agreement SA number 18-009. With Hatch Associates Consultants Incorporated to provide software, support, and professional services related to short-term inter-project hydraulic optimization and efficient unit dispatch. The board will recall that we have been in the process of implementing the two-dam independence project, and this work supports that effort. Ryan Roy will be making a presentation.
Thank you, Steve. Commissioners, welcome. Sort of nice to virtually speak to you. I'd like to be looking at everybody, but here we are, pandemic times and all. Steve's correct. We went through a little over a 2.5-year project to prepare for independent operations or sort of the expiration of the coordination agreement. That project went live November of last year, so we've now been operating a little over 7 months. One of the vendors we selected was Hatch. They do provide our dispatch model, so we have an aggregate request for generation from our participants. We give that total request, including our load, market purchases, to this software product, and it makes a determination about how to split the generation between Rocky Reach and Rock Island. It does that on a unit-by-unit basis. As we've been operating for 7 months, we've sort of identified some use cases for the tool that we think will help us get better dispatch. So first and foremost, we want some offline sort of analytical or study capabilities. We'd like the software to sort of run a dispatch solution through time. So it uses a bit of a snapshot functionality now where we can look at a very narrow window of dispatch. But as we've been operating, questions from the operations folks have come up. You know, what happens if we constrain our units slightly differently? What happens if we, set different constraints at the project? Can we get a better dispatch, one that limits starts and stops, gives us better reservoir operations? So we would like to be able to look at these alternative dispatches across time. So I think the offline study capability will help us with that. Energy planning and trading has a specific use. We do I-937 modeling. We want to get credit for efficiency gains that we make at the projects. Steve mentioned a possible use case when we did pre-agenda that we may get tax credit for more efficient operations. So we would like to use this offline tool to help our department with that analysis. Additionally, we've taken on a second phase of this independence operations project. So we're going to implement unit level set points, which we don't currently do now. We're going to implement unit commitment, which is allowing the software to sort of tell us which units to turn on and off based on our forecast, working heavily with G&T. They're leading that effort. So we want to have some support from Hatch for that. And then finally, training. There's been sort of a requirement or lots of interest in the dispatch, how we're operating under this new paradigm. So, you know, folks from hydro engineering, hydro operations, system operations, our control systems engineers, lots of interest around how we're using the tool, how the tool is supporting our dispatch. So we'd like to bring them on site to do some training as well. So the long story short there is we've had a good relationship with them over the last, you know, about 3 years. We are getting use out of the tool. We've identified some enhancements and things that we would like to do to help us get, you know, better dispatch, you know, more efficient dispatch, better informed dispatch, help those folks at the plants, the engineering and operations staff meet the constraints that they have. So the idea behind this resolution, our goal is to make sure we can continue to use Hatch and make these enhancements and upgrades that we think are going to bring real value to the district. So that's the purpose of the resolution. So we're looking to increase the funding by approximately $500,000 up to $1 million. We'll extend 2 years on the performance date. So that gives us some support and maintenance over that time as well. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? I guess there's no questions, so thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is Agenda 14, a resolution declaring an emergency and authorizing the general manager to take all steps reasonable and necessary to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic to protect the district employees, and district customer owners. Eric's going to give this presentation.
Yes, thank you, commissioners. Thanks, Steve. Eric Walquist, general counsel, commissioners. So Resolution 14, as proposed, is a resolution intended to provide some flexibility as we start to reopen operations here at the district and return employees to working while also being compliant with the varying and changing orders that are coming out of the jurisdictional agencies, including the governor's office. So a bit of background, commissioners, for the record, is when the original proclamation was issued by the governor, there were a number of PUDs across the state who took steps similar to the one that we're proposing today to declare an emergency, waive competitive procurement requirements, and authorize the general manager of the respective utilities to proceed to procure the materials and take the steps necessary in terms of labor materials to respond to the COVID pandemic. At the time, commissioners, we did discuss and consider that internally for the district. But we, in cooperation with the ICS, the Incident Command System team, determined that we didn't see anything on the immediate horizon that would require us to change the already in-place delegated authorities that the board has already enacted. So as we've continued the journey through the COVID response, and now that we're getting some more direction related to mask wearing, social distancing, and what it means to safely return employees to work, particularly those who are not able to effectively and efficiently work remotely, we are seeing on the horizon some potential expenditures that could challenge one or more of the procurement requirements that we operate under. Some of those involve the purchase of masks, for example. We have not yet had an instance where we believe, based on what we know today, that we have violated any procurement guidelines or responsibilities. But if we continue to purchase masks in the quantities that we are seeing on a monthly basis, we could challenge the monthly like-kind purchases limit. Similarly, we are exploring opportunities at the district to provide additional safety for district employees and customer owners who visit the facilities, to include contractors, consultants, and ratepayers. And some of those include modifications to working spaces so that employees can work safely, some HVAC-related work, and some other modifications that are under consideration. No decisions have been made yet about those efforts, commissioners, but depending upon the quotes and information that we get back for whatever particular path is chosen, then the existence of this emergency resolution would enable us to respond substantially more quickly than if we had to proceed through the normal course of developing a design or performance specification, working up the bid documents, and going out to bid. Those could have delays of 2 weeks to more than a month in response time, just preparation under the fastest, I would say, of paths, longer if we needed to coordinate, which I don't anticipate at this point, with the board, because one of those procurements was outside of the already delegated thresholds. So I don't see that piece on the horizon, but I do see this being valuable to staff to provide some flexibility to return people to work as quickly as we can in as safe a manner as possible. We do have substantial internal controls in place related to approvals and reviews of contracts and expenditures by more than just the procuring individual. All those procedural safeguards would continue to be followed in the event the board chooses to adopt this resolution. But really, that is the background and the intent of the resolution. I can't predict what additional work might be required because, as you all know, the circumstances are changing literally daily. And similarly, we see responsive guidance from jurisdictional entities, including the governor's office, on a fairly regular basis now. So we will do our best to keep you updated as to those requirements and what our internal processes are and expectations to respond to those. But with that background, staff is requesting that you enter or adopt this resolution to provide that flexibility, but I'm happy to answer any questions or concerns that you have about it, if you have some.
Commissioners, do we have any comments or suggestions or discussion for Eric?
I guess I would comment that in this is probably the most uncertain time I've faced since I've been a commissioner, and providing this type of flexibility to the management, I think, is essential for us to be effective in addressing what we need to do in this COVID virus.
Thank you, Randy. Any other thoughts or comments to share? Well, I'll chime in and say that I think that, as you pointed out, Eric, times are changing quickly, and there's bound to be even more changes ahead of us that are unforeseen at this time. And putting into place the proper authorizations in order for the district to respond to both known and future unknown issues resulting from COVID make a great deal of sense in my mind. So thank you for being forward thinking.
Thank you, commissioners. If there aren't other questions, I'd just like to mention that I really appreciate the help that I received in this from Dan Frazier and his team at Procurement Contract Services, and Stacy Jagla's team, particularly Matt Bowles, who's been working with PCS to make sure that we've stayed within the parameters to this point and to help identify. It wasn't solely my, for sure, forward thinking. And there's been a team working on this from the beginning. There'll be a team working on it throughout. And those two in particular, with respect to this resolution and being able to anticipate some of those needs to give more flexibility, they've been very helpful. So thank you, Commissioners.
Well, and I would like to chime in and say that I didn't mean to suggest that you did this on your own, Eric. I know you're pretty smart, but there were others, I'm sure, involved. And I didn't want to neglect them as well and tell them good job for trying to look around corners.
Appreciate it. I appreciate that, Commissioner. My response was additive, not because of the comments you made, but merely because I had forgotten them in the first presentation. So,
Commissioners, any other thoughts or comments to share with Eric? Okay, I think that's it.
Okay, we're up to item 15. This is the cable replacement budget adjustment. We don't normally bring these forward, but this is for a large amount. There's a lot going on with as a result of COVID. The proposed motion is to increase the total project budget for distribution underground cable replacement project by $600,000 for a revised total project budget of $1.6 million and to decrease other distribution project budgets for 2020 by the same amount. Excuse me? I was trying to see if I could get through that without sneezing. It didn't work. This will enable a shift in spending between capital projects, but will not change the overall 2020 distribution capital budget. Lindsay Mons, hopefully you're on the phone and can address this.
I am. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Lindsay Mons, Business Manager and Customer Utilities. As Steve mentioned, we have a request for you today for a budget transfer between different projects. Because it is over the $500,000 limit that's delegated to the general manager, that is why we're here requesting it of you today, a $600,000 transfer from some of our overhead projects to our underground system. There's multiple benefits associated with this transfer and why we're proposing it, the main one being that it is following up on the presentation that Chad Rissman provided to the board at the last meeting for improving our reliability in our distribution system. So as Chad mentioned, our underground cables are one of our key areas where investing in our infrastructure should and will provide direct enhanced reliability results. These projects replace old underground buried cables that are either deteriorating or have frequent outages or both. The total project budget of $1.6 million reflects approximately 30 cables throughout our system for this year's plan. So that's one benefit. The other benefit that we've found in this particular situation is that underground work is much more effective as far as social distancing goes for our crews, so we're able to continue performing work even with all the current COVID requirements in place. We are transferring this out of our overhead budgets because that overhead work with bucket trucks requiring two individuals in the bucket at a time are much more challenging in order to maintain compliance with the COVID requirements. So that is what we have for you today, a transfer of $600,000 from overhead work to our underground system. Do you have any questions for me?
Commissioners, any questions for Lindsay?
We have prepared a proposed motion for you. If you wish to proceed, or we can provide additional information.
Commissioners, this is Eric. If you're so inclined, I think it would be satisfactory to approve items 13 and 14, which are the two resolutions, and 15 with the motion with one, as presented, with one motion for all of them. That would be fine.
Eric, has that motion been provided in the board packet?
Yes. It's actually written out, which is the reason that I suggest, I think, as long as the motion is to approve 13, 14, and 15 as presented, then that would be acceptable.
All right. I would move approval of items agenda items 13, 14, and 15.
I'll second
the motion. Thank you, Commissioner. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Commissioner Congdon. And it's been moved and seconded. Are there any discussions? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The ayes have it.
Okay, and with that, we are ready to return to manager items. Let me try a couple that I think will go relatively quickly. Ron Gibbs, are you on the line to provide an update on the policy renewals for the 21-22 insurance program? Might not be on yet. Okay. How about Mike Coleman? Have you joined us for an update on wireless community access points in bandwidth?
Yes, I have, Steve. Okay. So I was going to cover two things. First, the hotspots and then the network bandwidth. As far as the hotspots go, we have 13. The last was turned up as of June 15th. We know that Native is looking at a couple of additional hotspots, but we have no confirmation on where or when they are going to be ready to turn them up. And looking at the usage that Localtel provided, the number of users has been relatively stable up until the last week. And we would attribute the lower usage last week to the holiday week. What we do see is a lot of variability in the bandwidth. It varies according to the type of users. Apparently, there are some folks that are doing real work type activities, and they save it up. And so one day you'll see the bandwidth usage on the hotspots by hotspot go up, and then it'll recede to a more normal level. Overall, the usage appears to be staying fairly stable. As far as the network bandwidth, it is doing exceptionally well. We've actually seen the bandwidth on a downward trend. We're crediting part of this to maybe just an acceptance of the COVID information, and there's not as many people constantly seeking COVID information. We also have school being out for the year, and we have people spending their time outdoors in the great weather that we've had. So what we've seen there is that the bandwidth has almost come down to pre-COVID levels on the network itself. That may not be consistent with what you're hearing in the national press, particularly for the cell phone companies, but it is a trend that we've seen other places in the industry, and like us, it tended to coincide with the end of school and with the pickup in outdoor activities for the summer. So what that does is it puts us in really, really good shape. All of our OLT shelves are well below maximum usage parameters, and they're handling the load without breaking a sweat. So that's really the update for today. Any questions?
Mike, I have a question. In terms of the hotspots that have been established throughout the county, what is the current number?
There are 13 of them, Gary.
So we're at 13. Thank you.
That does not include a number of hotspots that Localtel has established off of their SkyFi network where we do not have fiber. So they have taken care of some of the needs on their own.
Thank you, Mike. You don't know how many Localtel is established, do you?
Gary, I'd have to get an exact number. I will say between 3 or 4.
Okay. Thank you. That's close enough. Don't go to any more trouble than that. Thank you.
I guess what I would add there is that we're not hearing additional requirements from the community, and that's really what would drive the ISPs to look at placing additional hotspots.
I might add there was an article in the newspaper that the library system was doing similar.
Well, I think when you look at all of the hotspots available, either through the library system or the school systems, there actually are a tremendous number of places within the county that individuals can get access to the internet.
Okay, if there are no further questions, thank you, Mike. Carrie Wendell and Lindsay, are you on the line?
Yes.
Great. Okay, so we're going to do, as we have for the last few board meetings, an update on COVID-19 economic impacts and translation to impacts on PUD customer owners.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. This is Carrie Wendell, Manager of Customer Relations. So the new information that I'm going to provide today is based on the numbers as of June 30th. So if you go to slide number 2, this is shows the unemployment applications, and it looks like there are 240 new initial applications for this week, the week ending June 27th for those applications. Slide number 3, next slide. This slide is based on the customers that have self-reported that have been impacted, so there's not a big change on this slide this week. There's only one new residential customer that's contacted us since June 8th, and those numbers are the numbers on the side with the credit rating. Those are still very close. There hasn't been a big change with that. And currently, we have no payment arrangements with these customers. And from the last presentation, we've had 40 new residential customers that have been approved for the energy assistance. So we continue to refer customers to community action. In the last 3 weeks, we've made contacts to the residential customers, close to 300 customers that the group made contact with in the last couple weeks. So we've made a big, we've had a lot of outreach in the last couple months on these customers. So next slide. Slide 4, the information on this slide, we've added a little more information from based on the conversation from the last presentation. We've added the past due buckets per the request of Commissioner Arsenault. So as you can see, those balances are getting older, and we'll continue to see this we'll continue to see this grow compared to normal because of our policies after the 60 days. So the residential the residential is one thing, but then there's a few things going on with the commercial accounts. You can definitely see that there's some growing balances from non-payment. However, we have one commercial account that makes up about one-third of that commercial past due. So it's really not as bad as it looks. And also, the customer relations group, as I mentioned, they've been focusing on contacting the residential customers and assisting them with bringing those balances to current. But we have not been reaching out on the past due commercial accounts yet. So the plan is we'll start reaching out to them starting this next week. And just another thing to note with the commercial accounts is there are still some that we have been estimating because of the access issues to the meters. And as access becomes more available, we'll be at a point where we can rebill the account. And then when that happens, that restarts the payment clock, basically. So then we'll see these balances moving from the 120-day bucket back down to the 30-day bucket. Does anyone have any questions on this slide?
So, Carrie, just on the $112,000 on 2020 residential, that total number, can you refresh my memory, roughly how many households is that? How many meters is that?
Let me see here. I think I've got a number here I can give you. It looks like we're looking at about 200. Let me check on that, Commissioner, and get back to you on that. I want to make sure I give you the exact numbers. But it looks like, yeah, I might be able to provide that while Lynn does her slides.
Okay. Yeah. No rush on that, Carrie. Thank you.
I will get it for you though. I'm thinking it's over. Yeah. Let me get that for you.
Okay.
Okay. So then, if we move to slide 5, again, this slide does not have a big change. You're just going to see the number of disconnect notices for the year on each of those based on the month. And this here also shows these. Oh, Garrett, Commissioner Arsenal, I think that this number here, the 245, is going to be your number of customers.
That's the number? Okay. All right.
Yes. 210 residential customers, and then 35 commercial customers make up those numbers.
Thank you very much.
Sorry about that.
No problem. If I had just looked on the next page, I would have seen that too. Thanks, Carrie.
That's all right. I wasn't thinking that it is. I wasn't. Never mind. We're good. Okay. So there's not a big change on that based on the credit scores. The internal PUD scores, those are fine. Those are similar to the last presentation. Then if you move to slide 6, this was our helping hand slide. You'll see that the numbers for June are lower. I'm not sure why. We've been working with customers, and I have a feeling it could be because a lot of them are getting the EAP, Energy Assistance Program help, because of that number that jumped up so high. So we continue to refer them to Community Action as well as provide the helping hand payment. So the contributions now since March are up to $11,000. And then the balance remaining in the fund is at $65,450. So from here, I'll give this presentation to Lindsay.
Thank you, Carrie. Good afternoon again, Commissioner. Today is my day for special topics. The special topic in this conversation is some updates that we're making to our website. Just to keep you informed of what's going on out there. I'm working with Kathy Melton, who is our customer programs analyst, to provide some updates to provide easier access to our customers for these programs that Carrie has talked about. Consolidating them into one resource page where kind of a single place for customers to take a look and see information on our fee waivers that are currently in place, as well as the disconnection suspension, and information on how to contact the PUD for payment plans or other resources, which is really the best way for customers to get their information, is to just give us a call and let us know if they're struggling. Also, information on the Helping Hands program, other weatherization programs, our rate plans, and all of those sort of things. And on the next slide, this does link to some efforts that are currently underway in Olympia. While we know we're not able to just cancel our past due accounts, we do recognize the economic hardship for the people and businesses of Chelan County, and that is in accordance with the governor's proclamation that came out on Friday. It's actually Proclamation 20-23.6, I've updated a different presentation this morning, apparently. So in that proclamation, the governor did extend the fee waivers and the disconnection waivers until August 1st. So that is in accordance with our plans, which go through the end of July. And it does encourage or require utilities to provide information on their websites, and he did extend that date. And it's not July 10th anymore. It is August 1st. So that gives us a little bit of more time to get everything in place. Going forward, we will continue to review the guidance that was just released on Friday to make sure there aren't any other small things that we need to do. But should anything change, we'll certainly keep you posted and provide information to you on our website when it's go live. So with that, I'll turn it back to Carrie for questions.
Commissioners, any questions for Carrie or Lindsay?
Let me just mention that you may have seen an email communication from George Kahn at Waputa. He had suggested that it would be important to have language that says either the general manager or the board has reviewed and approved the PUD COVID-19 customer support program list that will go on our website. We've taken the easier way here just to say the general manager, but if the board would like to adopt a motion to that effect, that's okay with us too. Either way works. Gets us to the same place.
Commissioners, any thoughts on Steve's comment on the motion? Well, for one, I would be very comfortable with just allowing the general manager to have that authority. I don't know. That's just one commissioner speaking. Do my fellow commissioners have any thoughts on that?
It works for me.
Yep.
Steve, I think what I've just heard, was that you, Ann, that was in agreement?
Yes.
And I don't want to speak for Commissioner Bolts or Commissioner McKenna, but I do think that you have our comfort level if you want to move forward with that authority.
Great. Thanks, Ann. As always, we'll keep you informed if there are any changes in this arena.
Thank you.
Okay, I think there are no further questions. We're ready to move to our last manager's item, which is to Ron Gibbs is going to give us an update on the insurance program.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ron Gibbs, Insurance and Claims Manager, and I'm just here to close the loop with the insurance program renewal, which happened on July 1st. At the last board meeting where we had our presentation, we estimated that we would be paying premiums of $3,112,000, and we were able to negotiate terms of $3,052,000, and we had some extra room granted to us based on the volatility in the market this year. Unfortunately, we did not have to use that, but this all resulted with a 23.1% increase, which is a tough pill to swallow, but we were fortunate at least to be able to complete our insurance purchases this year within the time frame allotted. So our 2020 budget overage is 4.3%. And that really concludes the renewal for the year. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Commissioners, any questions for Ron? Hearing none, I guess we're ready to move on. Ron, thank you very much. I appreciate your hard work. I appreciate you sharpening that pencil and getting the best deal possible for the district. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, that concludes our manager items, and we're ready to move to commission items.
Commissioners, anything to discuss, anything to bring up today?
Gary, I don't have anything.
Thank you, Steve. I do note we have a motion for a tri-commission meeting. Would someone care to make that motion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Bowles.
Meeting on Tuesday, August 11th at 1 p.m. to be held virtually for the purpose of holding the tri-commission meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Bowles. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we set a special meeting on Tuesday, August 11th, 1 o'clock, to be held virtually for the purpose of a tri-commission meeting. Is there any discussion?
Gary, the only thing that I, Gary, the only thing that I have on that is we may want to consider continuing the discussion of the Heacon, just an update on that, and because it seems to impact all areas of the representatives in that meeting, may want to be included as an agenda item.
That's actually an excellent idea. Steve, is that possible that we could have staff or someone available to carry on that discussion during the tri-commission meeting?
Yeah, we can identify it as an agenda item our board is interested in, so we'll capture that as a follow-up item for this meeting.
Perfect. Great. Yeah. Steve, that was a great idea. Thank you for bringing that forward. Is there any other discussion? Hearing no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed say no. And the ayes have it. Any other commission items good for the good of the order? Hearing none, we should move on to commission travel.
Okay, Lisa Sanders is here and ready to engage with the board.
Hello, commissioners. We don't have much to chat about. The only change I have since our last meeting is that we do have a room held for Commissioner Smith for October's APPA fall board meeting, and it has a pretty strict cancellation policy, so we'll have to keep an eye on that and cancel as soon as we hear if they change to a virtual meeting. I also need Commissioner Congdon's May expense report signed for accounts payable.
Lisa, I put that in the mail.
Okay, thank you. Is there something anyone needs to be registered for that I've missed? I have Commissioner Smith registered for the APPA policymakers. I understand he's the only one who will be participating with that.
Lisa, I'll bet I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's probably safe to say that all of us would love to have normalcy remain and return to our travel schedule. But right now, it's pretty mundane.
Yeah, I agree. So I don't have rooms held till October. So unless you need something from me, I don't have any new information.
I think you probably have as much current information as we're all aware of at this time. And we'll keep you posted as things begin to open up and we see schedules changing.
Okay, that's great. I'm happy to help.
Thanks, Lisa. Appreciate all your help.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay, commissioners, with that, we're up to delegation of action items. We had one from the last meeting. That was one that Commissioner Arsenault asked about, providing a summary of dollar amounts of past due accounts, how large the balances are. I think we got partway there with what Carrie provided you. We were also going to try to look at individual accounts and see how big they are, but we had a little problem with the data. So we'll be planning to bring that back to you at the next board meeting.
Steve, I just penciled out some numbers, and based on $112,000 in for residential past due and 210 customers in that category, we arrive at a number. Now, obviously, that's an average number, and it can't apply to everyone, but it's something worth keeping an eye on.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll bring that back with more discussion next time around. And that was... Well, actually, I'm sorry. I do have from previous meetings, a couple, we just want to mark off the list. We had a commitment to get an outreach plan for changes to the low-income program. You got that at the last board meeting from Andrew Grissell. And the mini integrated resource plan options for Stehekin, you also saw that at the last board, or excuse me, in the board presentation earlier, so we just hadn't captured that and notified or identified on our list that that one's already been done. So we're just keeping track and making sure that we get everything done that we've committed to do. And that's it for delegation mechanisms. As to action items from this board meeting, we have three. We'll see if we can get some clarity around what FCS stands for, although it's possible it is just FCS, but we'll let you know about that. That's the consultant for the work on the allocation of costs for the new development activities in the county. We've got John Stoll will be looking into the David Allender request regarding a smart meter at his home. And Rebecca will add a Stehekin update to the Tri-Commission agenda working with Justin Erickson.
And Steve, this is Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
You've already answered the FCS question for me as much as I need to have it answered.
Oh, great. Okay, we'll take that one off.
It's just the consulting group. That's all I needed. I just thought it was maybe some internally applied acronym that I was just lost. So thank you.
Got it. Good. Thank you. Did we miss anything?
I think you have it.
Okay. We are done then with that item. And back over to you, Commissioner Arsenault.
Okay, well, we're at that point where we would ask the public if there are any comments, any public on the line, if you would like to ask specific questions. This is your opportunity. Please remember to state your name and your address for the record, and if you would be kind enough to please leave your comments at 3 minutes so that others might have a time to comment as well. Hearing no comment, we'll move on. Steve, I understand we need an executive session today.
We do. We think that we could probably handle it in 45 minutes.
Okay. So we will go into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement action, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW, and to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by RCW. We'll be in executive session for 45 minutes.
Actually, Commissioner Arso, I had forgotten about the last item, and so we might want to make that 90 minutes. It's going to be at your discretion, though.
Okay. We will go into executive session for 90 minutes. Very good. Do all the commissioners have the dial-in number for the executive session?
Yes.
Okay. We're coming out of executive session. It is July 6, 2020. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.